Okay, today is Sunday, March 27th, 2011. The year is rapidly flying by. I just want to mention, for those listening, the actual printing of the book is being done here in Israel, my new book, entitled From Washington Avenue to Washington Street. It's now been announced by the OU and Geffen Publishing, and the date of publication is May 2011. I believe they'll be on time, and they're making it available at a, what I consider an unbelievably low price for pre-publication orders. We're talking about a book that's over 500 pages with many pictures on high quality paper. Any one pre-publication order, it's 70 shekel or 18 American dollars. To order by email, it's orders@geffenpublishing.com. To order by phone in Israel, it's 02 for Jerusalem, 5380247, extension 0. To order by phone in the U.S., it's 1-800-477-5257. So I trust that information may be helpful, and I compliment the publisher on making it available at such an upright price. As one who's dealt with publishers, I know what I'm saying. I also want to mention that we spoke about in class, we got involved with the Summer Roche and his normative response, and we got involved with the Malava Malka, and I mentioned the difference between Hasidim and Mitnachdim. So my dear student, Rabbi Yoshua Grinstein, sent me sources on why Malava Malka is important. I admit that I know some or most of the sources, and I'm well aware, I always make it my business teach something on Saturday night that I should be able to stand up for Triyat HaMetim, if you know what I'm referring to. Nevertheless, I stand on what I said, that the Litvakim, they didn't know what a Malava Malka was, they didn't make a big deal Saturday night, they went back to learning, and that part is the Litvisha syndrome, that learning is Iba Alts, Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. And if you don't want to believe me, I'm just listening to a shir that Rabbi Lam gave. It has to be in the 60s, I would imagine. I don't think he was yet president of Yeshiva University. And the Rabbi Rackman is going to comment. And I just heard, I'm in the middle of Rabbi Lam. And boy, you should hear his analysis. As the Hasidim put more stress on tefillah and ecstasy, the Litvakim put more stress on learning and what I would call kaltkeit. How do you say that in English? I don't know. Kaltkeit, coldness, what can I tell you? A Litvak, Chassid is varm, he's warm, and a Litvak is kalt. I don't want to go any further. I have a lot more I could say on that, but leave it to what I said about 7 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever I did the shurim on Chassid. Now, there's no question that the Besamim Rosh was a fabulous experiment in a literary forgery. To make it acceptable, it's like when you tell a lie, so you always, Chazal already say, there's no lie without an element of truth in it. In other words, you're not going to get away with a total lie. But if you put an element of truth, it's like the Abraham program ran that barbecue to get students to come to Yeshiva University. All I can tell you is, if they told you that night that in YU all you do is party and have hot dogs and hamburgers, it's a big lie. But if they tell you there's a little learning and a lot of hot dogs and hamburgers, that you'll believe. You follow me, Yossi? Because it's already palatable. Rakepit's opinion, if anyone would ask me, I'm opposed to a hamburger and hot. That's not what you go to YU for. Why you go to, because I think they have good rebbeim, and you can get a good general education. But I'm a dot miyat, I'm a dot yachid, I recognize that. So I expressed my opinion to my dear students, but please let it go no further. Okay. Now, but the Besamim Rosh had many tshuvot that were very normative. tshuvot that you're going to have to deal with day in and day out in the rabbinate. These are not tshuvot that are esoteric. These are tshuvot that are yom-yomiyim, as they say. And we saw many examples, and perhaps you can take one example of standing or sitting for Kiddush. This is a problem that you will have no matter where you are. I've seen the Mekadesh stand and people sitting. I've seen the Mekadesh sit and people standing. The truth is, I don't want to go into Lumdus now, but I could really make a case that if the Mekadesh is sitting and you're standing, you're not Yotze Kiddush. I could make a case. You understand what I'm saying? If you know the Lumdus, what I'm saying, it right before you, it flows before my mind. But you can't win on these topics, and he deals with it. The whole question of Slichat and Avinu Malkeinu on Yom Kippur. All right, this is a battle that was fought from the time of the Goyim on. And we reach some sort of compromise. Avinu Malkeinu we don't say, so we say a little bit less Slichat. But believe me, it goes against the grain of Shabbat to say Slichat on Shabbat. But what can you do? Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur. I can tell you an interesting anecdote that appears in Mitzvah Chatuna, which Geffen Press is now putting out in English later this year. That's by Yosef HaTzadik Mendelovich, right? You recognize the name. So he wrote an autobiography when he got out, a memoir when he got out, when he arrived in Israel, Mitzvah Chatuna. So he tells the story in prison. Yom Kippur, they found out that Yom Kippur falls on Shabbat. So he paskin that it's impossible that you delay Yom Kippur for Sunday. You follow like a Tisha B'Av. He couldn't comprehend that you fast and cry and say Slichat on Shabbat. Of course, when he got out of prison, he found out how wrong he was. But I have to tell you, in theory, he had a case. Now, so the Besamim Rosh has a little bit Emet in it, a little bit Sheker in it, and above all, it has the striving of a poor Jew, Reb Shaul Berlin, a Gon Adir, caught up in a world where he feels he's being crushed, but he's 200 years before his time. There's no YU, there's no Lander College, there's no Kovat Beit Torah, there's no way to combine a program of the Beis Medrash in West Hempstead and going to Touro or Queens or LIU, no way to go to John Hopkins and Ne'er Yisrael. And his answer is the Besamim Rosh. The attack on it was extremely strong, and I showed you Reb Mordechai Bennett last time. And what's interesting about Reb Mordechai Bennett, he wasn't an extreme, extreme Rav. He was modern. He was part of the big world. He was one of the pace setters for coming out of the ghetto in Germany. And nevertheless, he wrote to the Besamim Rosh's father, telling him, look what your son has done, look at the farce. And he goes tshuva by tshuva, and he shows that this man has written a literary forgery. All right, that was the first attack, and I need not tell you, anyone reading it, some people were silent out of respect for the Besamim Rosh's father, out of respect for his cousin, the Nodav Yehuda. Other people mumbled under their breath, but Reb Mordechai Bennett put it into writing, and his tshuva is quoted. Whenever you talk about the Besamim Rosh, you have to talk about Reb Mordechai and his attack. Now, let me go further, and let me entertain you and take you into a world that is absolutely true, and nevertheless will be an eye-opener to you. Gentlemen, as I've mentioned more than once, everything in life has gotten more expensive. Right or wrong, what we paid for the New York Times when I was growing up was 2 cents. Then it was 3 cents. When it went up to 5 cents, it was shocking. Today, I think the daily New York Times is $2. I'll be damned if I'm going to pay $2 to read their anti-Israel propaganda. But $2? a candy bar that we pay 2 cents for, 3 cents for, 5 cents for, today you pay half a dollar, 75 cents, etc. The only thing in life that has gotten unbelievably cheaper is printing. Originally, when the type of a book was set, and I think my first book, I may be wrong, but I think my first book, the type was set by hand. Do you have any idea what that meant? That every letter you had to put in, you had the book sets that they were called, if I'm using the correct Yiddish word, and typesetters, and they specialized in putting the book together. Today, print, you give the publisher a manuscript, anyone can publish a book today, you have all types of press, some that will publish any book, some that will publish some books, some that only will publish a book that will sell well, but for money you get honey, and everyone, there's what's called a vanity press, you give them a manuscript, a computer program, and boy, that computer program can turn into a book within hours. It's an amazing world. And books really are cheaper today. Well, imagine, as I just said before, that my new book is being sold pre-publication for 70 shekel, $18. I mean, it is an amazing thing. Now, when people had the set type, the book censors were fabulous. They were the bosses. They were the rulers. Gentlemen, nothing speaks like money. For money, you get honey. You want to bribe a typesetter? Believe me, they were not Siddiqui Olam, they were not Rebbeim, they were not Hasidic Rebbeim, they were not Melamdim. Oh, I gave them a little bribe, and you could change the course of Torah history. Now, I'm going to begin with the most famous example of all, which I spoke about many years ago when I spoke about Hasidut. There's a pasuk in Hosea. Hosea, one of the smaller Nevi'im, Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Yud. It's right at the end, right near the end. Ki yisharim dakei Hashem, v'tzadikim yehubam, Uposhim Yikashluba. You recognize the pasuk? The words of God are righteous. Tzaddikim go in a righteous path. And then we have Poshim. We have people who learned in the finest yeshiva, become the biggest apikorsim. Poshim Yikashluba. Will stumble. Now, the great Noda Yehuda, and I'm quoting from his Tshuver, Yoredeya, Siman Tzadi Gimel. You'll open up Yoredeya, Noda B'Yehuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau. Think who I'm quoting from. I have grandchildren who are direct descendants of Rabbi Cheskel Landau. Gilly, don't get too excited, because walking the face of the earth, there must be 50,000 direct descendants of the Noda B'Yehuda. Among them Tzaddikim, and among them Hashem Yirachem Aleinu. I had a next door neighbor from France in 18 Rav Berlin, a single woman named Landau. She was the first girl after seven generations of Landaus, one after another. Okay? Raised in an assimilated home in France by her father, a medical doctor. I don't want to go into more details. She was my next door neighbor, so don't get overly impressed. You can be aneinagel, that word you know, Yossi?
Yeah.
Baruch Hashem, that word he picked up from his mother and his grandmother. You can be aneinagel of the Noda B'Yehuda, but Gili, yesh v'yesh. But I would like to believe the majority are like my grandchildren who go on the proper path. In Sadi Gimel, anyone can tell me this truth, one of the most famous, the Noda B'Yehuda was asked, what is the Nusach for the L'shem Yichud Hitshu B'Rikhu? Before a Chassid Davins, he has all these Kavanas. Have you seen it? The Havaya, and the Yudke Vavke, and the Neruah. No, what's the proper Nusach? The Noda B'Yehuda picked up a snowball, rubbed it in dirt, threw it at the questioner, and told him, you lousy, rotten, apikores of a chassid, paraphrasing, the truth, Baruch, chassidim mikarim ba'u, chadashim mikarim ba'u, people came, newcomers, Johnny come lately, they're changing Yiddishkeit, halavai, we should daven what we have to daven with kavana. But to add on, to know the Mikud, the 100% absolutely, totally opposed. At the end of the tshuva, he says, V'al'hador hayatchom hazeh, ani omer, yisharim darkei Hashem, v'tzadikim yechu b'am, v'chassidim yikashlu b'am. Got it? Took the sentence, paraphrased it, and made meatballs out of the Hasidim. Gentlemen, the Noda Yehuda I read to you from is published in Israel. It is modern. It is up to date. No one can interfere. You know what happened when the first edition came out? The Hasidim saw what he did. When they heard about the manuscript, they went to the printer. They went to the Buchsetzer. No? Maybe the Buchsetzer's name was Ehud Olmert. Right? Do I have to elaborate? They offered him a few greenbacks. You know the way it appeared in the first edition? The pasuk, correct. Poshim yikashlupam. When the book came out, Noda Yehuda looks at his manuscript. Could you imagine? I gave them a manuscript to publish, and I take a look where I praise, I don't know, Lakewood Yeshiva. They suddenly come in and they're critical. Noda Yehuda sees how they changed it, and he breaks into a broad smile, and he says, look at the difference between myself and the Hasidim. The Hasidim changed what was in the original text. They changed Hasidim into Poshim. And I changed Poshim into Hasidim. Got it? But in the second edition already, he saw to it that the original text was published. Hasidim yikashlu b'am. Yitzchak, in your honor, how do I know this? Where did you go to school in Philadelphia?
Dropsy,
an institution that doesn't exist today. They don't even know Dropsy. Dropsy today is the University of Pennsylvania, combined with their graduate school in Jewish studies. One of the people who did a doctorate, did you know, Harav Dr. Aaron Wertheim? He was an old Yerushalmi from the Wertheim family. I think it was his father who discovered the Cairo Geniza. But the father had to get back to Yerushalayim. It was a Kiddush, Shabbos, Chevrit. So he ran back here. The word went out. It's either his father or grandfather. The word went out. What's doing in Cairo? Schechter and Taylor got two elderly women with a lot of money to finance it. They didn't leave until Vayenatzlu at Mitzrayim. You follow? It's all the fault of his family and Yerushalayim and Yerushalmi Kugel. Anyway, he was a rabbi in Brooklyn. He did a doctorate at Dropsy. It is a fabulous doctorate. Hilchot v'halichot v'chassidut. I have the 1960 edition published by Mossad Rav Kook. It was republished. And if I'm not mistaken, it's been translated into English. It can be checked. If I'm not mistaken, it's translated into English. And if you go to page 72... you have the whole story of the Noda Yehuda, the original edition, the second edition, the comment of the Noda Yehuda, and this was the power of the typesetters. So, Yitzchak, by the way, is today the yard site? Oh, it's today. So, Zaina Gutta better. Okay, I think of, say, I think of Judy, you have no idea, Malta and I. So Zaina good to bet. Chazak ve'amatz. Gentlemen, you think, what does this have to do with the, what we're talking about? There was some in Rosh? Watch what happens here. Chatam Sofer. I'm quoting from Chatam Sofer, Chelek Orechayim, Tshuva Kuf Nun Daled. And the Chatam Sofer, I'm going to quote from two Tshuva. Unfortunately, the next one you're going to see, I'm shaking like a leaf. You'll understand why in a minute. But I'm quoting from now, Kuf Nun Daled, Orechayim. Gentlemen, in the Chatam Sofer's time, the atom bomb already dropped. Shaving on Chalamayit. Who is Matir? No, the Yehuda. No, the Yehuda is not a lightweight. This is Rabbi Cheskel Landau. You want to know what I mean that they're not lightweights? It's very simple. You open up the Litvish Paisim. Open up Reb Moshe. There are so few Achronim that he quotes. If you spoke with Mori Rebbe, you spoke with the Rav, Shaila Halacha L'Maisa, this is not Rabbi Avraham Yosef. This is not an Ungarish Posek. I'll talk about this next year in great detail with many examples. I'll show you Rabbi Avraham with his guns blazing and how his guns are slightly muffled over the years, and I'll even interpret why, but that's my interpretation. But nevertheless, when you open up Rabbi Avraham, you're opening up a computer. The Minchat Yitzchak, not the Litvish Paiskim. They went with Asparim, with Aseichel. They dealt with basic Rishonim, Taisvas, the Rambam. But even Reb Moshe and even the Rav, a Chatam Sofer and an Odom Yehuda, you couldn't avoid. You understand? Those are the Achronim, among the Achronim. Somehow, in the Shemayim, whatever you want to call it, there's a letter from Chazon Ish, we'll deal with that next year too. There's a certain Hashgacha Pratit here. You can't avoid the Chatam Sofer, you can't avoid the Novi Yehuda. So the Novi Yehuda gets the Shaila. Now, what's happening? The world is changing. Again, you have to see it in context. No question is asked in a vacuum. This is why when a Rav Paskins a Shaila, I wish I could refuse the Paskin and Shaila to someone I don't know. There's no question. The question basically is being asked, and most 99% of questions don't involve Isum D'Oraita. They involve Dinim D'Rabbanan. You have to know who's asking, what the context is. You see, until the Nogu B'Yehuda's time, no one shaved. Jews did not shave. You come out of the ghetto. We spoke about this. You see the big world. You see modernity means shaving. So suddenly, the question comes up. These were people who shaved every day. Now, why is Chol HaMoed a special problem? Because Chol HaMoed, first of all, there's a whole machloket Rishonim, why can't you shave on Chol HaMoed? From the pashtus of the Mishnah and Moed Katan would appear that you can't shave on Chol HaMoed, Shem Yikoneis Liyontav Menuvel, that you have to get ready. It's like Shabbos. My mother-in-law used to say, as a joke, what you don't do Erev Shabbos, you do on Shabbos. But what she was saying is, what you don't do Erev Shabbos, you can't do. That's it. And this is why a person, the Rav used to cry that in America, we have Shabbos Yidden, but we have not Erev Shabbos Yidden. You ever hear the Rav? The Rav would describe his Rebbe in Haslovich, that 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you knew it was Erev Shabbos. He went to Mikveh, put on his Shabbos clothes, he was saying, Sheh Shirim. I have one thing to boast about in my spiritual life. If you know me, you know that I'm an Erev Shabbos Jew. Now I start doing the Kabbalah Shabbos early, to changing the clock. By me, it's already Shabbos, hours before Shabbos. I have a list, I check my list, I do everything. To the Kotel, plenty of time. You're never going to see me rushing in at the last minute, falling into Mincha 2 minutes before sunset. Chas v'chalila. A Jew has to love Shabbos and Midap sign an Erev Shabbos yet. Period. Okay. So that's one reason. The other reason already we see, and the other reason is a dat yachid, but it's there. It's a little bit more than a dat yachid, but it's a dat miyut, is that shaving is a malacha. And the only malacha that are permissible, and that takes us into the very question, of what Chalamoid means. Does Chalamoid mean that there's an Issa Malacha with some Keterim? Or no, in Chalamoid there's no Issa Malacha, but the concept of giving cover to Chalamoid is to do a minimum of necessary acts, not what is not necessary. Alright, it's a real problem. Does Chalamoid have intrinsic Kedusha Tayom? Or is Chalamoid simply a day of Chol with some overtones of Moed, like on Rosh Chodesh you say Musaf? L'may Nafkamina? Do you tell me what's the Nafkamina? Very simple, whether or not you put on film. The whole Machlokes Rishonim. If it's a day that has intrinsic Kedusha, then it has a note, then you don't put on tefillin. If it's a day that's really Chol with some Issa Malacha in it, then you put on tefillin. And this is probably the greatest miracle, like I always say, the greatest miracle of the modern day state is that we have an army, that Jews can take orders, that there's a chain of command, that we can salute an officer, that one Jew, this is mamish, a tangible miracle. The other tangible miracle is, could you imagine all the Jews in Israel, Sfadim, Ashkenazim, Mekubalim, right-wingers, left-wingers, YU type, anti-YU, Gush Emunah, everyone, no one puts on tefillin on Chalamoid. It is a miracle that there is unity on this topic. It's a miracle. Faket, if you put on tefillin here, you're over in Issa deraita of Lotid Kol Dibur. And, you know, tourists come with the front type bench, they walk into Shulchan Aruch, they lift them and throw them out. Russia, what's out? And people come, why were they so angry at me? I said, why were they so angry at you? Did you ask a rabbi a shayla and he told you to put on tefillin and Eretz Yisrael? If that's the case, go back and tell your rabbi, it's a Russian vicious malicious, and he said, he prayed separate and on a way. Okay, now, the Chatam Sofer, Chelik Orechayim, Tshuva Kuf Mendalit. He already gets the tshuva. Are you allowed to shave during Cholamoid? Are you allowed to shave and know the Yehuder and to go to a Jew who has no panasar or a guy? It's, oh, wow. Now, Chatam Sofer already, he is really adamant against shaving. Gentlemen, when it comes to the Chatam Sofer, I'm not any smarter than my Rebbe. My Rebbe said off the cuff, Josh, I don't say he said this publicly because the Rebbe was very careful about the covet of Gedolei Yisrael. But the Rebbe said off the cuff one time at an RCA convention, sitting at the table on a Shabbos when he stayed longer to be with the boys. His wife already was dead. And these were his friends. These were the Rebbe's friends. His former students who had become prominent rabbis, these were the Rebbe's friends. So the Rebbe said to them, sometimes I wonder, had the Chatam Sofer not been so extreme, maybe the Neolog Judaism would not have developed in Hungary. In other words, the what we call a moderate reform. And then he said, but maybe the opposite. Had the Chatam Sofer not been so extreme, they would have been much bigger. And because he was so extreme, and Chadash Hasum in HaTorah, with all that that implies, he kept many Jews in line in Hungary. Okay, it's a question that you can't answer. If is the biggest word in the dictionary. But it's an interesting question, and we all have to relate to it in our religious deportment, particularly if we're going to be rabbeim and rabbis, and so many of you are going to be rabbeim and rabbis. How do we relate? How do we relate? Is it good to be like Rakefet? You know, I'm a big Hanoi, but I'm the most liberal guy in the world. I have students on, you know, yes, freedom of choice. Or no, do we have to be shtak and tell you, if you're not like me, you're an Eisbach, you're a Trumpenich, you're a Pushtak, whatever word you want to use. Yes, Gil?
Is
it B'diyavet, but you could only see the spirit. He was not like the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer is spitting fire here. And now, the Chatam Sofer goes crazy, quoting the Besamim Rosh, what we quoted from the Besamim Rosh. And here's where you have a replay of what I just introduced it with. Gentlemen, why do we call it the Besamim Rosh? The Chatam Sofer called it in his original manuscript the Kizbe Rosh. the lies of the headlines, the lies of the rush. He, what we call the summon, he called Kizbe. It's just amazing what happens here. Yeah. Just amazing what happens here.
Where was this annoying cotton about the whole discussion?
I believe it's in the last parak, you'll see. But that's what the, but you can get it. Excuse me?
The first mission in the third parak.
First mission in the first parak. Thank you. So, third parak. But I can tell you, you get all the sources. Reb Moshe has a big tshuva. And Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank and the Had Tzvi has a big tshuva. And you work your way backwards. They have all the sources, all the way back. And here I'm giving you the Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer calls to know the Yehuda. One pulls the other. Kizvei, if I'm pronouncing it right, from Lashon Kazav. Kizvei Harash. That's what he had in the original manuscript. I'll go into more detail in a second. Once again, the Maskilim were upset. What are you calling it, Kizbei Harash? So the Maskilim bribed the typesetter, and depending upon which edition of the Chatam Sofer you have, it reads Besamim Rosh or Kitvei Harosh, not Kizbei Harash. You follow? It's amazing what they were able to do. I have to tell you, the Chatam Sofer issued in Israel where they reset type, they go back to the original manuscript, and there it's Kizvei, the lies, the deceit. Okay, now, what the Chatam Sofer tries to show, and this is answering Gili's question, that the Noda B'Yehuda only did it Hora'at Sha'ah, because of the times in which he lived. Chas v'chalila, he didn't mean that it's a permanent concept. And he quotes from the Noda B'Yehuda, where the Noda B'Yehuda says that there's another reason why I want to be lenient here, v'hatam kamus imadi. I don't want to spell it out. And the Chatam Sofer says so beautifully, I'm going to be holech rachil, I'm going to become a gossip, and I'm going to tell you what the Noda B'Yehuda meant. And this is something I referred to when we did the Besamim Rosh. Gentlemen, it may very well be that if you don't have enough hair to bend back, there's no prohibition of using a razor. So he says, and this is interesting, he says, yeah, well, you're right, of course. He says, the Chatam Sofer says, that what bothered the Noda B'Yehuda at his time, they were all using razors. And they were shaving every day. So if they wouldn't shave Chol HaMoed, and they let it grow a little, after Yontif, it certainly is an Issa D'Oraita, because you have enough hair that you can bend back. So better they should shave on Chol HaMoed and not come to an Issa D'Oraita, then not shave on Chol HaMoed. And he says, Hineni Holech Rachil, and I will reveal what the Noda B'Yehuda meant. And he paskins lahalacha that it's infinitely better not to shave on Chol HaMoed and not to be samach on the Noda B'Yehuda. And he speaks in terms, this is the way our forefathers went. And if we want to remain from, this is the way we have to be remained from. And he says, now we live at a time, Bismanenu Kirabu Pritzei Hadar. And then Midu Chazon Lomahalo Gikuach Lomayin. You see, it's not just the halacha here. If we permit it, we're changing tradition. We're changing Masorah. And this is the Chatam Sofer. And he says something shocking here. Right afterwards, V'chein amin abo v'napir l'chalel Shabbat v'prehesia b'avonoteinu harabim. And if we permit shaving, before you know it, Jews will be mechalel Shabbat v'prehesia. And gentlemen, in this Chatam Sofer, in this paragraph, is exactly the challenge, the vicissitudes of life, the quests that have troubled us from the moment we left the ghetto. What can we do? What can't we do? Now, I remember the Rebbe, I told you. Moriel Rebbe, and believe me, that is the greatest Jew I ever met in my life. And I remember the Rav sitting where I'm sitting, and I'm sitting right over here. You see the picture. Don't have to make it up. Pictures from my era were not computerized. They were honest. And I told you, right before Pesach, Eric Zimmer, Professor Yitzchak Zimmer of Bar Ilan, one of our top students. You know, this is we had heavyweights in my time, Baruch Lichtenstein, Reb Yeshon Sadowski, Reb Yitzchak Zimmer. These guys were terrific. You don't know what we're talking about. These guys were into learning and big lamdanim. And Eric says, Rebbe, zef the shir. Have a shot at this. Can I shave kolamai? It's right before Pesach. And the Rebbe says to him, what are you asking? What's the question? You shave at Pesach? Of course, Rebbe, I shave every day. So, you want to avelis on Cholamayim? Certainly you can shave. You see what's happened? Where we've come so far that the Rav took, not that you can't shave on Cholamayim, you have to shave on Cholamayim. And yet the Chatam Sofer, if we'll be matis shaving Cholamayim, we'll be mechalel Shabbat v'prehesia. And see, this is the challenge. Where do we draw the line? Now, I'm going to talk about this from a halachic point of view next year. I have very deep shayrim to give on Hiskim Aleim Kol Yisrael, and I'll show you how it ties in with contemporary thought as well. But you see, there's nothing black and white here. I think we'll all agree today in the year 2012 that you can have a beard or you can shave, and you can be a very good Jew. I know many Jews that have beards who are Shomer Shabbos. I know many Jews who shave who are Shomer Shabbos. But you see, at the Chatam Sofer's time, this was not clear yet. The battle was being fought. And this is the tremendous question that we struggle with. How much can we accommodate? Look at the shirt I'm wearing. Look at the shirt Baruch is wearing. Look at the shirt David is wearing. All right, look at the shirt Gili is wearing. Are you allowed to wear shirts like this? I don't think the Chatam Sofer wore a shirt like this. I don't think the Nodri Yehuda to wear a shirt like this. You understand? And this is the tremendous question. This is Chassidus. And this is why my good friend Aaron Rakefit says in public, I said it before tens of thousands of people by now, Chassidus is conquered the world. The Litvish Yeshiva today are no longer Litvish. No longer. Everyone dresses the same, looks the same, acts the same, thinks the same. The Rav already went crazy in the 70s. I don't have to tell you what. Part of it I produce in my book. I call it the Rav Lichtenstein. But it's well known. There are tapes available. It's no big secret. His talks to the social worker, 74, 75. It went against the Tzelem Elokim. It went against Litter. It went against Brisk. It went against the world in which I was raised. But we're conquered today. I am a dinosaur. I am a relic. I understand it. But that's the Chatam Sofer. Very fascinating. We'll permit shaving. We'll soon be Mechal of Shabbos. Okay. But what's interesting is how he attacks the Besomim Rosh. He quotes him and rips him apart and calls it Chizavim. Lie. Gentlemen, another tshuva, a tshuva that for me today is breaks my heart. Chatam Sofer, Chelek Yeredeya, tshuva, Shin Chav Vav. Shin Chav Vav. a long tshuva. And what's the tshuva about? Suicide. All right? You hear the word suicide, many of you think, gee, suicide. Who commits suicide? I got a call this morning, a message on my phone. I was here already. I was in the building 6:15 a.m., but I was in the basement. I was looking for sperm. I actually was very upset at 6:15 because the safer I was looking for was not listed in the, and I gave it to their, I contributed to here. But anyway, the student helped me, found it. So, in Modelo. So at 6:15, there was a call from my office, and they left a message. So I don't know, at 8:15, when I turned the computer on, I always see to check whether David Pardo has sent me any emails that came in. And when I do that, I know I have to check the phone. I get a message. Talmud of mine, a dear Talmud from Hollywood, Florida, told me to call him back tomorrow morning. Very important. He had called me 6:15 because he was going to sleep at that hour. And I should call him back. And then if that wasn't enough, an email came in which reached me by way of Sherry to Rabbi Bednosh to David Pardo. You guys live in an amazing world. You just press buttons and you pass the messages on. And it told me to call the student. I called the student. And he said to me, essentially, Rebbe, sit down. It's someone who, whenever he came to Israel, visited the Shir, sat in on the Shir. David's last conversation with this person was how the dedication in my new book should read, because they're among the people who helped dedicate it with the OU. And he tells me this person committed suicide on Friday. And not a simple suicide. Left a note for the rabbi, left a note for his family. God have mercy. So when I talk about suicide now, you understand why I'm pale and why inwardly I am shaking. It is beyond belief. Okay, I already, Rakefet has to have a theory. People, I gave my theory why. If I'm right, I'm right. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. We'll see what plays out. Well, seemingly, why should a person commit suicide? Wow. Gentlemen, show you something else, right here in the tshuva. And I write about this in Rakafet Aron, I believe it's Chelik Bet or Chelik Aleph, when I deal with Moshe Feinstein. Part of being a posek is responsibility. What does responsibility mean? David Deutsch gets a letter, they ask him some questions about he's in the Torah Shraga, and he hops into Rakafet's classes, they say that. Puts the letter aside, he puts it into his Gemara. 7 years later, he opens up that daf, he finds that letter. Someone who has those work habits will not be a posek. A posek means responsibility. And here you'll see something unbelievable. The tshuva begins, this is by the Chatam Sofa, writing to a rab, who asked him a shayla. He says, I received your letter on Shabbos. Obviously, I couldn't answer then. Yom Rishon is the busiest day of the week for my rabbinate because evidently they had all the Dinei Torah, the businessmen that had arguments with each other, came to the Rav on Sunday. So he says, forgive me, I had to wait until today, Monday, to answer your question. And here you have the classic question with suicide. Everything we spoke about with the Besamim Rosh. A suicide, I don't want to go through all the sources again, but all of you know, you're not allowed to mourn him, you can't give him cover, you can't do this, you can't do that. Only Anina Shabalev is permitted. But a person who commits suicide, you're killing. It's lo tirtzach. It's one of the Ten Commandments. When you see somebody smoking, you should go over him and tell him you are transgressing one of the Ten Commandments. Lo tirtzach. You are killing yourself. Okay? I don't have the guts to do that all the time because I see these yeshiva boys smoking. I look at them. If they're bigger than me, I don't say anything. If they're shorter than me, I tell them off. I have told some. I have told some off, and I live to walk away. But with Kolzman, David Applebaum was alive, I could always tell them, look, my good friend is Dr. David Applebaum. He's willing to take you and show you an autopsy, what a lung of a non-smoker looks like, and what a lung of a smoker looks like. And Dr. Applebaum assures me when you see it, you will never touch a cigarette again. So, you see, Ibidas Mechaladat, this is Lotitzach, this is killing. You're killing yourself. You're killing a human being. Aye. But what happens? And this, of course, I have to say that the Summer Rosh was 200 years ahead of himself. When's the last time you saw a suicide? Remember what I told you? I went to the cemetery and then wherever, I gave you the name, Woodbine was it, I think? And that was built, the cemetery, out of the 1880s, 1890s, East European Jews, Woodbine, New Jersey. And now outside the cemetery, there were a number of graves, and I asked the rabbi, my friend, my chavrita, I said, Bernie, what are these graves here? He said, oh, the old timers told us this guy was a murderer, this was a prostitute, these were a few suicides. Now, when's the last time you saw a suicide buried outside the Jewish cemetery, outside Dalet Amot away from the rest of the Jews? Nowadays, whenever there's a suicide, you ask a simple question, was he normal? No normal person will commit suicide. This guy who just committed suicide, Rakefet already gave his theory. But I'm sure the rabbi will read the letter and give his theory. But everyone will agree, you can't fault him. He was an imbecile at the time. He was a moron. He acted in haste, etc., etc. Yes, Gilly?
Isn't that Oker, the idea that there is suicidal thought? How can they be completely Oker, the idea?
You're not asking about the tzaddikim, you're not asking about the Rabbi. We also discussed that at length. You're asking that how do you change the holding of suicide? So the answer is very simple, that to be a suicide, it has to be someone completely in control of his faculties. And what they call a suicide, like the ancient Greeks, to separate, we spoke about this, to separate the soul from the body. Socrates, Aristotle, viewed the fact that the soul is stuck in the body as a tragedy. We view it as the greatest challenge to Torah is to live with your soul and yet satisfy your body. You follow? We're very different than most religions that way. But so, it's not that you're totally uprooting the law of suicide, but because of our psychological knowledge today, it is very hard to find the true suicide. You are right. But it's like Mechirat Chametz. You know how Mechirat Chametz begins? It begins with a Tosefta, that it's a guy with a Jew and a guy, and the guy takes your chametz into his procession, there's no Easter on Pesach. You follow? Out of that came the whole head of Mechirat Chametz. So it's not just you uprooted, but you took advantage of a Tosefta and expanded it. Of course, with Mechirat Chametz, once you're mevatlet, there's no Easter d'oraita. So that also helps, okay? But you're right, you're absolutely right, and I made the point that the Summer Rosh in his time was criticized just for the words you said, that he's totally uprooting the laws of suicide. And today, you cannot find the suicide. Every time there is a suicide, they will look into it. He was mentally disabled. He wasn't in control of his faculties. He was thwarted. He was frustrated. He was this, he was that. You take teenagers, his girlfriend laughed at him. I'm serious. You know, in the army, they were very hard because the army has a certain percentage of suicides every year. And you have yeshiva kids, lower lane, you don't know what I've seen in life, kids who struggle. This is why you never make a kid feel if he's sinned. Never let him feel that he's Satan. You understand? Kid has to know, all right, you sinned, you nichshal. But there's always tshuva. Understand? God does not desert us. It's so important to give a healthy attitude. In my opinion, I call that a healthy attitude. But these are very delicate problems.
I
I've been involved with these problems. 52 years of teaching, I've seen a great deal, although I have to say the information I got today just shook me up so, because this was someone who was getting my Shayurim on a special email every week ahead of it being posted on the YU site. So I'm just shivering and shaking. Yes, Yitzchak.
If they come up, for example,
yeah,
they say, when there's such and such an illness, take such and such a potion for such and such a food or whatever, today we're not bound by it.
That has to do with the cures. The Gemara, the Achronim have dealt with it. The Rambam already is the Avram ben Aram.
The Rabbi is Mekil, and the area of suicide, it's because our knowledge today is far different and far beyond, forgive me for saying, of a rabbi in the 1700s or the 1600s, an issue of mental illness and psychological...
Right, no, I agree with you.
The poor guy who's frustrated in life, whatever the reason may be, this is why what you were quoting and some emotion, etc., is a very... This is the way how rabbis think of it.
Right, no, what Yitzchak said is very important, and I agree that the B'Samer Rosh was ahead of his time. He already foresaw the development of psychology and a human being. And as I told you then, I don't want to repeat all the details, but I under my eyes, I saw three suicides, all three with kippah on their head. Two of them Rabbanim, and one of them a PhD. And right under my eyes, I saw it. And then I did research. Remember I told you in class? Remember what I told you? That outside of teenagers, you know what the biggest suicide rate is? What's happening now? The winter is ending. Spring is here. April 1st. Pretty soon you walk out, you'll make the bracha on the trees. What we call Bichat Ha'ilan, Ha'ilanot. The whole world is in blossom. And a 50-year-old man is in a rut. He's gotten nowhere. And in two of the cases that I knew, these men in their 50s had just lost their jobs. They couldn't handle it. The other case, I don't know all the details. I don't want to go into more detail. I know the family is a brilliant family. And sometimes whether there's brilliance, there's sickness. In Yivrit Anachnu Amrim, Ben Gaon L'Shi Gaon, right? Not too much of a difference. Or in German, it's a Yiddish expression from German, An Ibuchacham. You ever heard that expression? You're too smart for your own good. So Yitzchak is right. And that's why on this level, the B'Samer Rosh conquered the world. In other words, when it comes to shaving Cholamoid, all right, you can call Rakef for the Shegas, he shaves in Cholamoid. Fine. On the other hand, when it comes to suicide, I don't think there's any big machloket today. And the case that I know right now, I am positive they're going to bury him in Eretz Yisrael and bury him normally. And Lo Aleinu, again, I told my student when he called me, and if I start talking now, it'll take an hour, but one thought from the Rav. The Rav always spoke about Sefer HaChatun v'Sefer HaGalui. I mean, you know, with Yirmiyahu, with buying the land, and the Rav applied it to a human being. There's the outside of the human being who you know, who you think you know, the personality, but there's the Sefer HaChatun, there's the inside of the human being that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. And this is so true about life. You can find people who are always happy, always joking. They're the saddest people alive on the inside. They've had the hardest life imaginable. And they're people who have a sour face. And yet on the inside, they're always happy and laughing. All right, it's a challenge. I would like to say about Rakefet, Echad Belev, Echad Bepeh. Okay? I think in that case, we're okay. I think that's a challenge. Is it good to be a Chad B'Lev, a Chad B'Peh, Alpin Masiyah? Yeah, it's very important. Yet on the other hand, I can tell you, I've been in Hasidic Fabrengens, and they're drinking vodka. I don't know. Don't you want to get happy? Hi, I say, naturally, I can get happy. I don't have to drink vodka. These are very adler differences, very fine differences in human nature. But you know, you'll never know. A person keeps a habit. Look at Madoff. Look at Bernie Madoff. Did his wife know? Did his children know? Just think what's going on. The New York Mets. Yitzchak doesn't even know what's going on. The New York Mets may fall apart. Their money was all with Madoff. Wilpon. They're all Jews. Go and dream that Wilpon is a Jewish name. They're all Jews, and Jews with Jewish consciousness. Kol hakavod to them. So this is a tragedy. And this is the Shaila.
See, in other words, they used to think that if a person commits suicide, it's like an act of
rebellion.
It doesn't have faith in God.
Right, exactly.
This,
exactly.
Is this is the person right. rebelling against the
right,
God.
Right, right.
The poor man.
Right, the poor man. The poor man can't cope with life. Now, the Chatam Sofer deals with this, and I'm going to go in. He reaches a conclusion which I would say is a middle of the road position. But one thing he does in his tshuva, he rips the chet out of the besamim rosh. He calls it here, then is that the besamim rosh quotes sources and reaches the conclusion that people who commit suicide are not to be faulted and not to be blamed. And he says the Besamim Rosh is absolutely wrong, and the Pashtus of the Gemara, how you see Harugei HaMalchot, how they wouldn't remove anything, that they should die quicker. The executioner removes what is stopping the flames from spreading. That is one thing. But they would not remove it. And he says this proves, and he uses the words that I used before, that if you speed up your death, you're a rotzeach. And you're dying in reshut because you helped kill yourself. And he says, this is totally against the Besamim Rosh or the Kizvei Rosh. And Bezen Yistayev, he has falsified sources. Now, I'll come to what he paskins la halacha in a few minutes. But I want to tell you there's a very fascinating source here. In the middle of the tshuva, he deals with a tradition that has haunted us. We don't really have a proper answer. Even with the Chatam Sofer, and I've spoken about this with the Rav, I spoke about this with Rav David Lipschitz. Rabbeinu Geshem Ma'ar Gola had a great tragedy. One of his children converted away from Judaism, converted to Catholicism. Now, are you aware of this? Rabbeinu Geshem would talk. Who is bigger than Rabbeinu Geshem? But again, in every great family, I don't want to go into other names that you may not know, I can give you a whole list of great, great, great Achronim, Gedole Yisrael, who had children who converted away. The best known case, of course, is the Baal Tanya. One son converted away, but there are other examples too, Lo Aleinu. Well, there's a whole book that's by David Asaf about the Lubavitch doesn't talk about it, but if you press them against the wall, they have to admit it because it's well known. A lot has been written about it. It's like my brother and art school with Gavarin Cutler, that art school has biographies of Mr. Mendelovich, Rep Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rep Moshe Feinstein, Michael Tress, Rep Moshe Scherer. But the most important Jew who ever set foot in America, who changed the whole literature world, and the truth is we're only sitting in this room because of him, is Reb Aaron Kotler. What do I mean while he's sitting in this room? He introduced the idea of kollelim in America. When I went to YU, yes, when you went to YU, YU had a kollel? No? Come on. Mandachar Shmei. At 23, 24, you're kicked out of the yeshiva into the big world. But Lakewood began with a kollel and learning and more learning, and ultimately YU had to follow course and take a look. How many kollelim does YU have today? Am I right? Four different kollelim, am I correct? Correct me if I'm wrong. And we're, Baruch Hashem, one of the kollelim. Well, hold on 1 second. So Art Scroll has nothing on Reb Aaron Kotler. And I say very simply, they can't do a biography of Reb Aaron because the facts about his on being on the train to Moscow to go to university to join his older sister Malka are too well known. So for them to write about it with the whole story, with the author, with intercepting the letters from Malka, they can't leave it out, but they can't write it. You understand? So that's why because too many people know. Art Scroll can publish a book that changed his history dealing with Rakefet. Rakefet's story, the story with Rebellia Esas, only Rakefet knows the truth. He has all the documents. No, who cares? Rakefet, Shmakefet, who gives a hoot? So they can do it. But with the Baron Cutler, they can't. That's the same thing here. Okay. Anyway, what did you want to say?
Wasn't Hechal Reb Chaim HaLevi? Didn't that precede?
What do you mean? What do you mean, Hechal Reb Chaim HaLevi?
Yeah, with the.
Oh no, Hechal. You want the real insight on Hechal Reb Chaim HaLevi? Yes, there was Beit Midrash Elyon was there before. It was all Vasadik. You know what the word Vasadik means? Reb Heschel Shafi uses it in his Sfarim. Vasadik. How do you translate that? Wow. Well, let's help out. Vasadik. It's watery. It's watered down. You follow? That's what it means. Vasadik. No. The real Kollel Lakewood is the one that introduced Kollel in America. Period. That there was a Kollel or two before, you're right, and that why you had a Kollel. Ah, but only Rakefet knows that. New Baruch, you know what why you had? Late 40s, early 50s? This was the chesed of Rabbi Belkin about no one writes. So I fought the world. And people say to me, I can't write, I'm prejudiced. You need a PhD, a thesis. I'll be interviewed, I'll help, I'll give advice, I have documents. Rabbi Belkin organized the Kollel for the Europäische, for the Shanghai crowd, the greater Shanghai crowd. Not everyone got a job at first, so they sat and learned. Do you remember that? Was that in your time or was gone already? It was in 51 when I came to the yeshiva. They were sitting and learning in one of the in the library building or the Bernard Rebbe building across the street, these little buildings that were built with American government funding after World War II. And they sat and learned about Avigdor Tzippishtein was the Rosh Kollel, but that was a chesed kollel till they found their place on the American scene. But Rabbi Aaron with Lakewood, now, Heichel Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi, this is the real inside story. Okay? Take every word and write it because every syllable is correct. The Rav was in Boston. The Rav was a practicing rabbi in Boston. This is what made the Rav unique. He was the greatest gadol, perhaps, to come to America who was no more than a practicing rabbi dealing with teaching kids how to bench lulav and esrog and giving kids matzah for Pesach from homes that were chabistic. Quote, end quote. I know this from the Rav and from his family. By the time the Rav had Americanized, remember when you come to America, it's like coming in Aliyah. The first few years you're blinded, you haven't found your way, you don't know your way around. You don't know the ins and outs. Here a few years, you are integrated, to use a fancy American word. Fine. By the late 30s, Reb Moshe was integrated and the Rav was integrated. And Reb Moshe was the most unhappy father in the world because he had a son who had the ability to be a goyim shebegoyim and he was wasting away in Boston. Got it? Okay. Had he been elected chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, who knows what would have been? Tova Lichtenstein raises that question in her essay. And I hold, had he been elected chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, there's no end to the way the man would have developed. Like Rav Kook coming here and becoming Rav Kook. Understand? No. But I am the happiest guy alive that he was not elected for a very selfish reason. Because all I had to do was get on the 36 bus, take it for 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and there I was, a little Bronx boy coming from nothing, sitting at the foot of Rav Soloveitchik. Okay? So I thank the stupid Jews in Tel Aviv of 1935 that they did not elect the Rav chief rabbi. Thank you very much. And he mos modelach.
He may never have developed to be.
Yitzchak, he would have developed like he developed in America. He's the Rav. He had abilities that you and I put together times a million don't equal. Please. Yeah, I disagree. Yitzchak, you can argue. And here he wouldn't have been challenged? What, are you out of your mind?
He would have been
the. No, chas v'chalila. Anyway, so Reb Moshe was very upset. By the late 30s, the quote Rat Kefir, I said this in many, I don't know if I ever said in the Kolam or what I know, I never teach in the Kolam, I only teach what I don't know. By the late 30s, you had a new type of Jew coming to America. Not like my grandparents came. My grandparents came knowing they're coming to America, they're throwing their tefillin away. All right, I have one set of grandparents, Nebo Mechal Shabbos. And the other set, where my grandfather came from such, my grandfather learned in Belushin. My grandmother was related to Rabbi Revel. I found that out last year, right or wrong. My grandfather, maybe Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, okay, he went to shul twice, he maybe Simchas Torah, basically. And he ran in there, and the Morgan, you know, when they got smicha, how proud he is of his grandson, getting smicha, but the Yiddishkeit was wiped out. Now you had Jews coming to America in the late 30s who were coming not because they wanted to. They were running away to save their lives. Among them, yeshivish people, but some good gekendler in them who knew how to learn. So Reb Moshe went to Rabbi Revel. You have to give Rabbi Revel all the credit. The world, you fellas don't know what a debt you owe to this man who has nothing left in the world outside of Rothkopf's body. That's the only thing left around Rabbi. No children, no grandchildren, nothing. Nothing. But Dr. Lander, his faithful student, assigned the doctorate to a young man named Aaron or Arnold Rothkopf. Baruch Hashem. He did a good job. I give Rothkopf credit. So, Lazayn Gesund. Gentlemen, he went to Rabbi Revel, and they came up with the idea of organizing a kollel around the Rav in Boston that would be under the aegis of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. In other words, formally, Rabbi Revel would lend the name of the yeshiva to the kollel. And that's where the Rav began teaching, and that's where the Rav was challenged, and that's where the Rav would wake up the students 2 o'clock in the morning, Yichavanenfa for the Rambam, I can find for the Shvera Rambam, and that's where the Rav had his first real Talmidim on American soil. Among them, a lot of Chafetz Chaim graduates, some of the Chaits, some of the Scheinbergs, etc. Rabbi Benjamin Back, they're all gone already. From Baltimore was a big Talmud Chacham, very close to the Rav. Well, Agus was already, even before, but he was already a rabbi in Boston at that time. And then, when Rav Moshe died, and the battle went on, who would succeed Rav Moshe, there was a lot of opposition to the Rav. I don't want to go into it now, maybe some guy can give lectures on it, I would like to, you know, to put down for history what I know, because I recognize what I know. I don't want to say it further, but you understand what I'm saying. So, there was a tremendous battle over succession. Finally, they gave the Rav a 1-year contract. They'll see at the end of the year if he's any good. When the Rav started commuting to New York, it weakened the kollel in Boston. That's when the Rav brought in his nephew, Rav Michal Feinstein, Rav Moshe's nephew, who later, the Rav's cousin, I should say, Rav Moshe's nephew, who later married the Brisker Rav's daughter. And Rav Michal, who worshipped the ground the Rav walked on, he took over the kollel. But he was not the Rav, and it didn't, by 1943 it was off the map, something like that. Then Rav Michal came to New York, and he joined his uncle in MTJ, and then he went back to Israel. They told him, are you going to marry the Brisker Rav's daughter or not? And he went back and he married her, and the rest is history. So that's the story.
Rav Moshe's nephew.
Rav Michal Feinstein, of course, the son of Rav Moshe's brother. If I'm correct, it can all be checked in the volume on Rav Moshe. Now, in the middle of this tshuva, coming back to Rabbeinu Gershom, Rabbeinu Geshem, when his son, the Meshumma, died, Rabbeinu Geshem sat Shiva, according to tradition, 14 days. And the Rabbeinu Geshem HaGola, it's brought down in the Mordechai. You can see all the sources. Hidavel, Yudal Joma Benochamuma, Shem Amakal Vishkoimel Ishkita Yudal, like we say about Miriam and Dayom and Lavod Liot Kenidon. In other words, only, it should have been 14, but nevertheless, we only waited for Miriam 7 days. 7 days she was afflicted, and he sat Shiva 14 days. And of course, first of all, you see that even though his son was a mumma, his son was such a terrible sinner, nevertheless, he didn't break the total connection. He did sit Shiva for him. But here there's a tremendous question. Why 14 days? Everyone struggles with this question. The concept of Shiva is 7 days. Even Miriam Hanaviyah, they waited 7 days, that's all. Even though she spoke against Moshe Rabbeinu, she spoke about the Ribbono Shel Olam's decree. Why 14 days? And we don't have a black and white answer. But the Chatam Sofer says something very beautiful here. You know why he sat 14 days? Because when a child becomes a mumah, you have to sit 7 days originally, at that time. He always hoped the son would do tshuva. With the death of his son, he saw that tshuva would never happen. So he sat twice. Once because he died, and once because he was a mumma and he had broken away from Yiddishkeit. Now, 1 second, Gili. I'm not passing la halacha. If a kid today becomes Mechallel Shabbos, I'm not telling you to sit Shiva, chas v'chalila. Although I have to tell you, I know a case of a prominent rabbi who was my mentor in the rabbinate. He had one daughter who left Yiddishkeit, gave up being Shmishor Shomeret Shabbat. He sat Shiva for his daughter. One case I know. He caught up all connection with her. And as far as I know, she's still alive. I don't believe she ever came back.
Professor, you have to add, do you or do you not approve of that?
No, I said I don't approve. I would never say to someone. But he, I just told Gilly I wouldn't advocate it. Not Bizman Hazan. Rabbi Rebel had many shilas like that, but he said never. I think I have in my book one of the tshuva. But he said, you know, Bizman Hazan, it's a different world than when a kid. Who knows, there has to be hope. You talk about Bob Dylan, the singer, became an evangelistic Christian. Let me tell you, he has a son who wears, son-in-law who wears a black hat. So you see, there's always hope. You got to keep the conversation open. I had a student who became, it's an entire story, became one of the top students in the early years of BMT. The Gush became an Episcopalian minister. And I'm the only one. I called him. I debated with him. No one had the guts. Anyway, in his middle age, he came back. He's not that firm, but at least he's a Jew today. He gave up the ministry and he said he's a Jew again, etc., etc. I hope he'll come all the way back. I know I corresponded with him. I told him about a book the Rebbe published there. He said to me, I had questions that you couldn't answer, that Rabbi Lichtenstein couldn't answer. I said, well, that's part of life. We're only humans, we're only mortals. Of course there are questions we can't answer. But then a book came out by the Rebbe, the Ethical Man, what's it called, from manuscript. Very powerful book. And he's a bit of a philosopher. I wrote to him about the book, but I never heard from him, so I don't know how to interpret it. This book might have been up as Rebbe Berkowitz is a little different. He deals with halakhic problems. And the Rav here deals with pure, simple, the essence of raison d'etre of man and who man is and the soul of the human being and his inclinations. And very basic. Those particular lectures are not really Jewish. They're for the human being in general. Yes, Gili?
Where's the source for sitting
I don't believe it's in your point. Yeah, as far as I recall, it's in Eurodea. It's brought down, trace it back, sure. But I don't recall in the Gemara that the Gemara should discuss it. As far as I recall, it's not in the Gemara.
But Eurodea says you should.
Yeah, they quote. No, it quotes the opinion that I have to look. I can look into your dagan. It's no big deal to find the sources. But Allah Maisa Bisman Hazer, I would be very hesitant to tell anyone to sit Shiva. It could be certain people need to sit Shiva to make a complete break. In other words, they're suffering what happened to their family. Could be psychologically, it's very important for them to sit Shiva. But I think the negatives outweigh the positives, in my opinion.
Is
yes,
Shiva, like no learning Torah, like
nothing? Yeah, no, it's a regular Shiva. It's like a death. There's no.
Can you imagine what that does to the person?
No, but I'm saying
so. You'll never be able to do Shiva.
I agree with you. Okay. So I want to come in.
So what is the subsofa? That's the reason.
Okay, I'm coming to the Pesach now. So the Chatam Sofa goes through the Besamim Rosh, he rips the hell out of the Besamim Rosh. He goes through the various Gemaras, goes through the story of the Rabbeinu Geshem. At the end, he reaches a fascinating conclusion. When it comes to burial, it may very well be that with a suicide, Tzidkim L'Zalzel Bo. We have to bury him outside the cemetery. We have to show the world that we do not condone, we do not tolerate, we do not want to be malamed schut on an individual who committed suicide. But when it comes to the memory of the individual, where we're trying lalameda lavschut, remember I told you these individuals I knew who committed suicide were talmidei chachamim. All their life they lived with Torah. So when it comes to Kaddish, when it comes to Yahrzeit, when it comes to an aliyah, a chiyuv aliyah, there we would allow the aveilim to absolutely have this schut. Yitain lo chelko b'kaddishim chiyuv aliyah l'sefer Torah b'beit Knesset lo makaddish avu avotam b'yud beit chodesh. Now none of you understand what the Chatan Sofer just said. You know why you don't understand? Because you never davened in the monk shul in London. No? Who here has davened in the monk shul in London? Gentlemen, Munich, Israel originally, one person says Kaddish. Right or wrong? One person. Baruch HaTov and Melech Olam Shekhon. Well, yes, I'm saying monk. I saw it. I never done them right, but I saw it in monk shul, the yakin. One person says Kaddish. It goes with the hierarchy. Whoever is in Shiva, Shloshim, Yud Beit Chodesh, Yahrzeit. Yahrzeit knocks out, I believe, any other Kaddish. Shloshim knocks out Yud Beit Chodesh. What they do in the monk shul in London, they add on Tehillim if they're four or five people to say Kaddish, they stand up front. Aleinu is one Kaddish, the Shir Shalom is the second Kaddish, and then like good Chassidim Chabadnikim, they add on Kapitla Chtilim, and after each Kapitl, a person says Kaddish.
Only one.
Only one Kaddish. One Kaddish for one person. Aliyah on a yard site, the yard site gets it. Gentlemen, do you know how much machloket there was in shuls over this practice? Have you been in the rabbinate? Do you know that if not for your sight, orthodoxy would have disappeared in America in the 1930s, the 1940s? What kept the orthodox shuls going were the kadeshim, with the avelim. Right or wrong? You know how many Balei Tshuva came out of it? The Machloket. So, Imlo Nevi'im B'nei Nevi'imim. Remember the Gemara in Pesachim? Remember the Gemara in Brachot? Fuk Hazi Mai Ama Devar? Klal Yisrael, by and large, rejected the original practice. And in 90% of shuls today, when it comes time to say Kaddish, 10 people, 20 people. Rakepet has an expression, that was a real meaning, we just davened that. You know what that means, Gili? 100 people davened, there were 2 Kaddish suckers. Ah, that's a real meaning. But when you got 100 people davening and 35 Kaddish suckers, that's a Kaddish meaning. That's not a real meaning. Follow? I have to be honest. I started going to Minyan every day, I don't know, 50 years ago, 45 years ago. I said to myself, what am I, a Kaddish sucker? I'm first going to be makpid on Minyan when I have to say Kaddish? Baruch Hashem. Here in Israel, it's a different ballpark. Baruch Hashem. The kids, I don't want to talk about my own family, but Baruch Hashem. Kids haven't missed the Minyan since they're 11 years old. So, the Chatam Sofer says, when it comes to Kaddish, when it comes to what I would call finding a schut for the Nifta, making the Nifta in heaven, wherever he is, the Ribbono Shel Olam should see that he left good children, no different than Rabbeinu Gershom. And there he paskins lahalacha, you cannot kick the children aside. And that's the conclusion he reaches. And he says, what do you mean a suicide? You can't be certain. He drowned himself. Was anyone there to see that he drowned himself? Do you have Adam that he drowned himself? Do you have She'ein Olav Shum Fikpuk? Can you be certain that you have no doubts? All right, you saw his mood. I mean, this is very modern what he's writing. You saw his state of mind. You may be right that he committed suicide, that he murdered himself. But look at the children. Look at the words of the Chatam Sofer now. Mishpacha yekara. It's a very fine family. Ubeno halomeid beveit ha-sefer. And his son learns in the communal school. That's like our saying, the son learns in Yeshiva University. The son learns in Yeshiva College. The son learns in Lambda College. And why should they suffer? So when it comes to where the living are involved, allow them to say Kaddish. And the other Avelim cannot push him aside. He has to get his share. He has to get his rights. And this is the way I would paskin la halacha. So it's very fascinating. I have to say, the Chatam Sofer here is extremely fascinating. These are the two famous tshuvot of the Chatam Sofer, where he rips apart the Kizvei Rush, and nevertheless, you can see the influence of the times, the shaving. It troubles him, it bothers him. He can't come out and totally critique the Noda B'Yehuda, but you see it bothers him. When it comes to suicide, there you can see with all that he criticizes the Kizbei Rush, but modern psychology is playing a role, and the influence on him of Rabbeinu Gershom Mar HaGola is mamish influence halacha l'maisa. What I quoted before is from the classic Chatam Sofer. This is the new edition. It's much easier to read, much clearer to read. And here they restore the original text. his Beharosh. No one can play with it. It's right there, black and white. Gentlemen, let me reiterate, and we have fascinating shiur. We began with the Pasuk in Hosea, the story of the Hasidim and the Mitnagdim. It is a fascinating story with the Nod B'Yehuda, the Nod B'Yehuda's sense of humor, Poshim to Hasidim, Hasidim to Poshim. Did all this really happen? I can tell you the story of the Nod B'Yehuda. I've heard it from so many different sources. I would like to believe it really happened. And in Wertheim's doctorate, you'll see he gives you literary sources about it. The Kizbei Harush, or the Kitvei Harush, you have exactly the same incident happening with the Chatam Sofer. Except there it's the Hasidim who bribed the printers, and here it's the Maskilim who bribed the printers. Gentlemen, nothing compares to how I begin next week's Sheva with the Munkatsha Rav, the Minchat Maza, and his Shofa, and what he finds in the Besamim Rosh. He turns him in to a modern day Zionist. Lo Allah. Then we go into the $64 million question. So who defends the Besamim Rosh? And boy, will I show you a world that defends the Besamim Rosh, and I'll explain to you the difference between guys like myself and Baruch and David and Gili and Yossi, who are all ethnically married, but they themselves are Eidat HaMizrach. Although I have to say, your parents, your father's ethnically married. Your father's
tradition.
What about you, Gili? Also, Rabbi Shalom, so you guys choose to be Sfadim, it's the easy way out. You have all the kulis except for glatt kosher. But today, everyone eats glatt kosher. So it's the OU outside of our Kippitz book that has an OU. Everything else is glatt kosher with the OU. Gentlemen, I wouldn't miss tomorrow for all the money in Fort Knox, all the gold in London, and all the radioactivity in China. And you'll see tomorrow. I'm gonna show you what happened to me with last week's lecture on Satmar. None of you know that the Rebbe is starring today in newspapers, and you'll hear tomorrow. And I will show you all the problems with the Satmar Shita. It's a world of material tomorrow. And then I have the special gift. Hold on, Yossi, 1 second. Tomorrow I tell you about Slabodka. The end of the year is 99 grand to the IOU list, and it is a bargain. But wait, next week are the final two Sheyurim before Pesach. So before you burn the chametz, please remember, I'm still giving shiur next Sunday and Monday. Pass this to Rabbi Rubin. Does anyone want from the Sfarim blog a whole entry on the Besamim Rosh?
Yeah, I think I
have. Does anyone want the tshuva by Rabbi Bleich on silk screen Torah scrolls that we spoke about in class? This is another copy of the book, of the volume that just came out on the rabbinic courts called the Sanhedrin. It is very fascinating. Michtav Mieliyahu, if anyone wants his biography, I needed it. I xeroxed it, but I used it for what I needed. If anyone wants the biography of Rav Dessler, it is yours for the asking. Finally, I want to show you how proud I am of my family. This Derech Amuna is about post-army Kolelim. The Rosh Yeshiva and one of the founders and the editor of Derech Amuna is my nephew, author of books already, Harav Ilan Tzipori. So the Rebbe is not only active in Anglo circles, even in Israeli circles, he can take a bow. Until we meet again, health and happiness.
Amen.
Das Vedanta.
Amen.
Amen.